pop music you love on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today on the show, we have reports from Gregory Stockel and John Russell. Gina Bennett presents Ask a Teacher, and we close the show with an American story. But first,
Kolaba used to earn money as a guide in Mali's historic city of Djenné, once a center of Islamic learning. The city is known for its large Grand Mosque of Djenné. The religious center has been on the UNESCO World Heritage in Danger list since 2016. The world's largest mud brick building used to draw tens of thousands of visitors to central Mali every year. Now, the structure is threatened by conflict between rebels, government forces, and other groups. Ba says the money he used to earn was enough to support his family, which now includes 9 children, and to pay for a small group of cattle. But now, few visitors come to the city. Ba has been largely out of work. When he needs money, he sells some of his cattle. Djenné is one of the oldest towns in sub-Saharan Africa. It has served as a market center and an important link in the trans-Saharan gold trade. Almost 2,000 of its traditional houses still survive in the old town. The Grand Mosque, built in 1907 on the area of an older mosque dating back to the 13th century, is worked on every year by local people. The work is a ritual that brings together the entire city. The large earth-colored structure requires a new layer of mud before the rainy season starts. Women are responsible for carrying water from the nearby river to mix with clay and rice hulls. This mixture is the mud used to cover the wall of the structure. Adding a new layer of mud is a job for men. The joyful ritual is a source of pride for a city that has fallen on hard times, uniting people of all ages. Bamuyi Traore is one of Djenné's lead builders. He said they worked as a team from the very start. This year's wall covering took place earlier in the month. "Each one of us goes to a certain spot to supervise," he said. "This is how we do it until the whole thing is done. We organize ourselves, we supervise the younger ones." Mali's conflict broke out following a coup in 2012. Militant groups took control of important northern cities. A French-led military operation pushed them out of the city centers the following year, but the success was short-lived. The militants regrouped and launched attacks on the Malian military, as well as the United Nations, French, and other forces in the country. The militants publicly stated their connection to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. Sidi Keita is the director of Mali's National Tourism Agency in the capital of Bamako. Keita said the drop in tourism was sharp following the violence. It was really a popular destination, he said, describing tens of thousands of visitors a year, and adding that today, tourists are rare in Mali. Despite being one of Africa's top gold producers, Mali ranks among the least developed nations in the world, with almost half of its 22 million people living below the national poverty line. Without tourism, few means are left for Malians to make a living. Anger over what many Malians call the crisis is rising. The country also saw two more coups since 2020 during a wave of political instability in West and Central Africa. Moussa Moriba Diakite is head of Djenné's cultural office, which works to save the city's heritage. Diakite said there are other difficulties beyond security, including illegal digs and waste disposal in the city. He said the office is trying to send a message that security is not as bad as it seems. The office also hopes to get more young people involved in the mud-covering ritual to help the new generation recognize its importance. It's not easy to get people to understand the benefits of preserving cultural heritage right away, he said. I'm John Russell.
In New York, Van Leeuwen ice cream brings people in with classic flavors like vanilla and pistachio. But sometimes, the ice cream maker adds what it calls a shock flavor, like Hidden Valley Ranch or pizza to the treat. Recently, chocolate maker Hershey added pink lemonade, a summer drink flavor, to its candy Kit Kats. And Frito-Lay introduced potato chips that taste like strawberries with a little bit of bacon. Not to be outdone, Britain's food company Little Moons produced fish and chip mochi ice cream flavor, while Walkers celebrated the holidays with a potato chip flavor of Brussels sprouts. Usually, these flavor combinations are introduced for a limited time, but sometimes the flavors are so popular that they become permanent additions. That is what happened with Frito-Lay's Flamin' Hot Dill Pickle Chips in 2019. While it would be easy to say the new and surprising flavors are produced to get attention on social media, experts say there is more to the story. They say food companies are reacting to people's changing and expanding tastes, while also trying to stay current and win over space in stores. Kristen Braun works for Chicago-based food and drink company Mondelez International. She says people now want more than just one flavor, and companies are finding the freedom to explore a little bit more and get more creative. Mondelez plans to release Sour Patch Kids Oreos, a kind of sweet vanilla cream-filled cookies combined with sour candies. The flavor is one of more than 10 different Oreo flavors being sold this year for a limited time of 9 weeks. Mark Lang teaches food marketing at the University of Tampa in Florida. He said that manufacturers and their suppliers have increased their ability to create such products. That has made it easier for them to experiment and put out limited editions more often. Kyle Shaddix is a research chef for the drink company PepsiCo. He said members of Generation Z, born between 1997 and 2012, are also fueling new ideas. Shaddix is currently experimenting with Mexican, Korean, and Japanese flavors. Gen Z is going to drive us faster. We're going to start to see even more exploration quicker than in the past because they're just so open to it. Experimenting with new flavors can increase sales in several ways. Sometimes they bring in new buyers to a product, and sometimes they also influence buyers to pick up more of the original flavor. Russell Zwanka is director of the food marketing program at Western Michigan University. He said, "Sour Patch Oreos sound interesting, but nobody wants to risk buying Oreos that don't taste good, so people buy both." When companies combine products, they are trying to build a link in people's minds. For example, Lang said when Pepsi combined its drink with Peeps candy flavor, it sent a message that Pepsi is current and fun. But new flavor combinations do not always work. Ben Van Leeuwen, the founder of the ice cream company bearing his name, said he could not eat more than a few bites of his company's Hidden Valley Ranch ice cream, and the shock flavor did not become a permanent part of his company's offerings because of their lower eatability, he said. But Lang said as humans, we like to experiment. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we continue our answer about the best way to expand your vocabulary. Last week, we said the best way to improve vocabulary is to really know a word. We talked about the form of a word, or how it sounds, is written, and what its parts are. Today, let's talk about the meaning of words. Knowing the meaning of a word seems easy. Translate it into your native language or look up the definition in a dictionary. But to fully know the meaning of a word in English, one definition is often not enough. English words are famous for having more than one definition. For example, look at the word run in these sentences. I'm going to run to the shop. She runs the local bakery. Water was running down the table. All the papers are running the story. The first definition in Merriam-Webster's dictionary for run is to go faster than a walk. That is certainly the meaning of run in the first sentence, but not in the others. When we say she runs the local bakery, we mean she is the person who operates, manages, or owns the shop. We could say water was running down the table or water was flowing down the table. And when all the papers are running the story, they publish it. We also have to know the ideas or feelings that a word suggests to fully understand the meaning of a word. Let's look at the first example with the word run. I'm going to run to the shop. This is different than saying, I'm going to go to the shop. The second example simply states that we are going to the shop. But the word run tells that the trip will be fast. When we look at the meaning of English words in this way, we can see that our vocabulary expands by fully understanding a word's meaning. However, we cannot just exchange one word for another without changing the overall meaning of the sentence. So, next week, we will take a look at synonyms, or words that have the same or nearly the same meaning. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
Now, the Learning English program, American Stories. Here is Barbara Klein with The Lady or the Tiger by Frank R. Stockton.
Long ago, in a very olden time, there lived a powerful king. Some of his ideas were progressive, but others caused people to suffer. One of the king's ideas was a public arena as an agent of poetic justice. Crime was punished or innocence was decided by the result of chance. When a person was accused of a crime, his future would be judged in the public arena. All the people would gather in this building. The king sat high up on his ceremonial chair. He gave a sign. A door under him opened. The accused person stepped out into the arena. Directly opposite the king were two doors. They were side by side, exactly alike. The person on trial had to walk directly to these doors and open one of them. He could open whichever door he pleased. If the accused man opened one door, out came a hungry tiger, the fiercest in the land. The tiger immediately jumped on him and tore him to pieces as punishment for his guilt. The case of the suspect was thus decided. Iron bells rang sadly. Great cries went up from the paid mourners, and the people, with heads hanging low and sad hearts, slowly made their way home. They mourned greatly that one so young and fair, or so old and respected, should have died this way. But if the accused opened the other door, there came forth from it a woman, chosen especially for the person. To this lady he was immediately married in honor of his innocence. It was not a problem that he might already have a wife and family, or that he might have chosen to marry another woman. The king permitted nothing to interfere with his great method of punishment and reward. Another door opened under the king, and a clergyman, singers, dancers, and musicians joined the man and the lady. The marriage ceremony was quickly completed. Then the bells made cheerful noises. The people shouted happily, and the innocent man led the new wife to his home, following children who threw flowers on their path. This was the king's method of carrying out justice. Its fairness appeared perfect, The accused person could not know which door was hiding the lady. He opened either as he pleased, without knowing whether, in the next minute, he was to be killed or married. Sometimes the fierce animal came out of one door. Sometimes it came out of the other. This method was a popular one. When the people gathered together on one of the great trial days, they never knew whether they would see a bloody killing or a happy ending. So everyone was always interested. And the thinking part of the community would bring no charge of unfairness against this plan. Did not the accused person have the whole matter in his own hands? The king had a beautiful daughter, who was like him in many ways. He loved her above all humanity. The princess secretly loved a young man who was the best-looking and bravest in the land. But he was a commoner, not part of an important family. One day, the king discovered the relationship between his daughter and the young man. The man was immediately put in prison. A day was set for his trial in the king's public arena. This, of course, was an especially important event. Never before had a common subject been brave enough to love the daughter of the king. The king knew that the young man would be punished, even if he opened the right door. And the king would take pleasure in watching the series of events, which would judge whether or not the man had done wrong in loving the princess. The day of the trial arrived. From far and near, the people gathered in the arena and outside its walls. The king and his advisors were in their places opposite the two doors. All was ready. The sign was given. The door under the king opened, and the lover of the princess entered the arena. Tall, beautiful, and fair, his appearance was met with a sound of approval and tension. Half the people had not known so perfect a young man lived among them. No wonder the princess loved him. What a terrible thing for him to be there. As the young man entered the public arena, he turned to bend to the king. But he did not at all think of the great ruler. The young man's eyes instead were fixed on the princess, who sat to the right of her father. From the day it was decided that the sentence of her lover should be decided in the arena, she had thought of nothing but this event. The princess had more power, influence, and force of character than anyone who had ever before been interested in such a case. She had done what no other person had done. She had possessed herself of the secret of the doors. She knew behind which door stood the tiger and behind which waited the lady. Gold and the power of a woman's will had brought the secret to the princess. She also knew who the lady was. The lady was one of the loveliest in the kingdom. Now and then, the princess had seen her looking at and talking to the young man. The princess hated the woman behind that silent door. She hated her with all the intensity of the blood passed to her through long lines of cruel ancestors. Her lover turned to look at the princess. His eye met hers as she sat there, paler and whiter than anyone in the large ocean of tense faces around her. He saw that she knew behind which door waited the tiger and behind which stood the lady. He had expected her to know it. The only hope for the young man was based on the success of the princess in discovering this mystery. When he looked at her, he saw that she had been successful, as he knew she would succeed. Then his quick and tense look asked the question, "Which?" It was as clear to her as if he shouted it from where he stood. There was not time to be lost. The princess raised her hand and made a short, quick movement toward the right. No one but her lover saw it. Every eye but his was fixed on the man in the arena. He turned, and with a firm and quick step, he walked across the empty space. Every heart stopped beating. Every breath was held. Every eye was fixed upon that man. He went to the door on the right and opened it. Now, the point of the story is this. Did the tiger come out of that door, or did the lady? The more we think about this question, the harder it is to answer. It involves a study of the human heart. Think of it not as if the decision of the question depended upon yourself, but as if it depended upon that hot-blooded princess, her soul at a white heat under the fires of sadness and jealousy. She had lost him, but who should have him? How often in her waking hours and in her dreams had she started in wild terror and covered her face with her hands? She thought of her lover opening the door on the other side of which waited the sharp teeth of the tiger. But how much oftener had she seen him open the other door? How she had ground her teeth and torn her hair when she had seen his happy face as he opened the door of the lady. How her soul had burned in pain when she had seen him run to meet that woman with her look of victory. When she had seen the two of them get married, and when she had seen them walk away together upon their path of flowers, followed by the happy shouts of the crowd, in which her one sad cry was lost. Would it not be better for him to die quickly and go to wait for her in that blessed place of the future? And yet, that tiger, those cries, that blood! Her decision had been shown quickly, but it had been made after days and nights of thought. She had known she would be asked, and she had decided what she would answer, and she had moved her hand to the right. The question of her decision is one not to be lightly considered, and it is not for me to set myself up as the one person able to answer it. And so I leave it with all of you. Which came out of the open door? The lady or the tiger?
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow
for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.